Hello, good afternoon. This is Muhammad Faraz. Today I'm going to start a new podcast in which I will discuss the American presidents, all American presidents from 1789 to onward. Sorry for disturbance. And before we go ahead, first of all, I would request to all of my listeners that please help me to build a good soundproof room for this podcast recording, and also I have to purchase a quality mics and other related thing. So for that I need a financial help. If someone can do, it would be great for me. So let's get started. On April 30th, 1789, George Washington, standing on the balcony of Federal Hall on Wall Street in New York, took his oath of office as the first president of the United States, as the first of everything. In our situation, will serve to establish a president, he wrote James Madison. It is devotedly wished on my part that these precedents may be fixed on true principles. Born in 1732, into a Virginia planter family, he learned the morals, manners, and body of knowledge requisites for an 18th century Virginia gentleman. He pursued two intervening interests, military arts and Western expansion. At 16, he helped survey Shenandoah lands for Thomas Lord Fairfax. Commissioned a lieutenant colonel in 1754, he fought the first skirmishes of what grew into the French and Indian War. The next year, as an aide to General Edward Braddock, he escaped injury. Although four bullets ripped his coat and two horses were shot from under him. From 1759 to the outbreak of the American Revolution, Washington managed his land around Mount Vernon and served in the Virginia House of Burgesses, married to a widow, Martha Dandridge Custis. He devoted himself to a busy and happy life, but like his fellow planters, Washington felt himself exploited by British merchants and hampered by British regulations. At the quarrel with the mother country grew acute. Immoderately but firmly voiced his resistance to the restrictions. When the Second Continental Congress assembled in Philadelphia in May 1775, Washington, one of the Virginian delegates, was elected commander-in-chief of the Continental Army. On July 3, 1775, at Cambridge, he took command of his ill-trained troops and embarked upon a war that was the last 6 grueling years. He realized early that the best strategy was to harass the British. He reported to Congress, "We should on all occasions avoid a general action or put anything to the rescue. Unless compelled by a necessity into which we ought never to be drawn." Ensuing battles saw him fall back slowly, then strike unexpectedly. Finally, in 1781, with aid of French allies, he forced the surrender of Cornwallis at Yorktown. Washington longed to retire to his fields at Mount Vernon, but he soon realized that the nation under its Articles of Confederation was not functioning well, so he became a prime mover in the steps leading to the Constitutional Convention of Philadelphia in 1787. When the new constitution was ratified, the Electoral College unanimously elected Washington president. He did not intervene upon the policy-making powers that he felt the Constitution gave Congress, but the determination of foreign policy became preponderantly a president's concern. When the French Revolution led to a major war between France and England, Washington refused to accept entirely the recommendations of either his Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson, who was pro-French, or his Secretary of Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, who was pro-British. Rather, he insisted upon a neutral course until the United States could grow stronger. To this disappointment, two parties were developing by the end of his first term, while leader of policies feeling old and retired at the end of his second. In his farewell address, he urged his countrymen to forswear excessive party spirit and geographical distinctions. On foreign affairs, he warned against long-term alliances. Washington enjoyed less than 3 years of retirement at Mount Vernon, for they died of throat infection December 14, 1799. For months, the nation mourned him. The presidential biographies on whitehouse.gov are from the President of the United States of America by Frank Friedel and Hugh Seidel. So, guys, I am reading all of these from whitehouse.gov, and I'm trying to improve my English. That is why I started this podcast. I hope you all of you will help me and will support me to keep this journey going on. Good. Hello guys, this is your host Muhammad Faraz, and today I'm going to start a new podcast. At this podcast, you will listen the history of Europe. Basically, this is going to be a series, and we definitely will have to upload a different episodes to complete this whole series. So in today's episode, we will read the revolution of the Middle Ages, and this series is the first episode, and we will read the revolution of the Middle Ages. I hope you will find interesting this podcast and will help me to make it more better by sending some donations if possible for all of you, and giving some useful comments, instructions, and suggestions to make this podcast more interesting and more effective for all of you. So let's get started. The revolution of the Middle Ages. Any broad evolution of the social, legal, and political development of Western Europe that took place in the 12th and 13th century will show that it witnessed sweeping legal reforms, indeed a revolutionary reconstruction of all the realms and divisions of law, feudal law, manorial law, urban law, commercial law, and royal law. And therewith the reconstitution of the medieval European society, it is also true that neither Islamic law nor Chinese law passed through an equivalent radical transformation. Consequently, neither of those systems of law ever recognized the broad variety of competing legal jurisdiction found in Europe. For example, commercial, urban, public, and professional jurisdiction were recognized throughout Europe. In any event, it is the great legal transformation that laid the foundations for the rise and autonomous development of universities, but also the pursuit of modern science. The rise of constitutionalism and parliamentary democracy, the foundations of what we know as due process of law, the very idea of elective representation in all forms of corporate bodies, the legal autonomy of the cities and towns, and a vast array of traditional legal forms unique to the West.
At the center of this development, one finds that legal and political principles of treating collective actors as a whole body. A corporation, universities, the medieval Latin term, the emergence of corporate actors was unquestionably revolutionary, and that the legal theory which made them possible created a variety of new forms and power of association that were distinctly European. Furthermore, the legal theory of the corporations bring in its train organizational principles, establishing such political ideas as constitutional government, consent and political decision making, the right of political and legal representation, the powers of adjudication and jurisdiction, and even the power of autonomous legislation aside from the scientific revolution itself. And perhaps the Reformation, no other revolution has been as pregnant with new social and political implications as the legal revolution of the European Middle Ages, by laying out the conceptual foundation for new institutional forms and legal thought. It prepared the way for the two other revolutions, the scientific and the economics. Consider for a moment that this idea was autonomous legislation means. It means that some public body, some corporate entity, some group of citizens is capable of composing and promulgating new laws that transcend by biological injections, customary law, Quranic legal prescriptions, or even edicts issued by an emperor in China. But of course, that power of autonomous legislation did not exist either in Chinese or Islamic law of the early modern period. So in today's episode, I hope you will enjoy this all. In next episode, tomorrow will be published, and that we will discuss some phases of the development. And through this podcast, I will keep all the European history in front of you. And let me clear one thing, that maybe my English is too weak. The reason is, as I'm not a native English speaker, so if you find any problem to understand any words or understand anything, I'm really sorry for that, and hoping that you all listener will help me to improve my English as well. So pardon, and enough for today's episode, and wait for next. Thank you so much.